My name's Chris Kirk, and this is TW Talks, the interviews podcast from 3 Weeks Edinburgh. I'm sitting in the Assembly Club bar. We're at the heart of the Edinburgh Fringe. It's happening all around us, and we're talking to some of our favourite Fringe performers who have shows at this year's festival. Today, Jack Ansett, whose show Looks Like a Bit of Me, is on at Assembly George Square Studios. Let's get TW talking to Jack. So I am still in the club bar at Assembly George Square in the middle of the Edinburgh Fringe. Thursday of week one as we record this. My next guest has joined us. Jack Ansett is here. Thank you for joining us.
It's okay. Hello. Welcome to me.
Welcome to you. Thank you for getting up in the morning. Are you an early riser during the Fringe? Or do you this early for an August?
No, I mean, because my show's at 4 p.m. and I had to adjust to the time zone, I was getting up in the first few days at about 4 a.m.
So that's a ridiculously early.
Yeah.
Nobody's a flyer at 4 o'clock in the morning.
No one wants to talk to you. So yeah, I'm not getting up at 4 a.m., but I've kind of maintained getting up early so that I can not be too unready for a 4 p.m. show, yeah.
I guess if you do a 4 p.m. show, you can have an early night if you want an early night, or do you see shows and do all the
That's kind of the tricky part, because if you want to go do see a late show or something, then your sleep schedule gets a bit out of whack. But I think I'm balancing it all right. I'm not going too hard. I'm not getting on the rack, as we call it in New Zealand. Does that make sense?
Well, we can ask ChatGPT what it means if we don't. Yeah. Okay, past, present, future. So we will talk about this year's Edinburgh show. That's really why we're here.
Yeah.
But let's take a journey from your starting comedy to this year's festival. So if you had to pick a moment where your journey in comedy began, what moment might you pick?
Yes, it began. I signed up to do a improvisation course.
Improv
course when I was 15.
Right.
Run by this man called Derek Flores. I don't know if you've ever come across him.
Aware of the name.
He's a Canadian improviser. He's worked with Robin Williams and things. And then he moved to Christchurch, New Zealand, and started running an improv course. And at the time, I wanted to be an actor. It was my big dream when I was a teenager. And then I did about two of these improv courses, and then he came up to me and said, do you want to I'm running a comedy competition. And I remember kind of something clicking in my head then, like, oh, of course I do, this is what I've been looking for. Or yeah.
So that was stand-up comedy competition.
It was the we call it the Raw Quest. I don't know if you guys have what your equivalent is.
Oh, there were so many. New talent things.
Yeah, new talent quest, yeah.
So this idea had been put into your head, you might take part in this competition. But at this point, you'd never done stand-up.
No, but I had I'd done a lot of things in school assembly, like talking in front of the whole school, and I'd always do something funny. And, those crowds were great. I killed. So, and I remember I did one of my school speeches in there. I was meant to do it on 9/11, and then at the last minute I changed it to a speech about every Batman's chin.
Oh.
Because there's a variety of
chins. The various actors.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and which was the best chin. And
did the powers that be approve?
No, they were furious because I had a great 9/11 speech. That's how I got to the final, you see. And then I decided to switch it up. Destroyed. And so I think, things like that put the idea in my head.
Yeah. So you were sort of doing comedy without even realizing it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So this competition, so you took part in this competition.
Mm.
And how long did you have to deliver? 5 minute set, 10 minute set?
Yeah, it would have been 5 or 6 minutes. I was 15 years old. I stole most of it off the internet.
So you Googled good jokes.
I can't remember what I did, but I definitely remember ripping some stuff off the web. And
you were heavily influenced.
Yeah. I was inspired, yeah. I don't remember it going awfully, but I was probably a bit delusional about how it went. And of course, I didn't get anywhere. And I think also in that heat, at this time in Christchurch, New Zealand, there was only about 5 comedians. It was me, David Kareos, if you know him.
Yep.
and a couple other guys who, so it was really small at that time. So from then on, I just started doing gigs in pubs after school and things.
So was there an open mic scene to go to, or were you just rocking up to nights where you could get 5 minutes?
We had one open mic called Alvarado's, which was at a Mexican restaurant. It was awful. And yeah, that was it was pretty rough, but I did that most weeks. And then the following year, I entered that competition again, and I won the Christchurch final.
With your own material.
Yes. Yes, thank you. And then I got flown up to Auckland to do the national final, because they let one person from the South Island into the final, and lost, but that's fine. And then I kicked off from there, really.
So you're still mid-teens at this point?
Yes, I am. I was 16.
So gigging, sounds like you were gigging quite regularly despite still being at school.
Yeah, I was, yeah. And it kind of pushed me, I think, into leaving. I didn't do my exams because I thought, oh, I'm going to be a comedian. And I think if I did do my exams and went to uni, I may have gone down a different path. But instead, I just moved straight to Auckland and started doing gigs and had no qualifications. So I kind of had no alternative but to
keep going. Yeah. Right. So you leave school, finish school, go to Auckland, and then you're just getting more slots, more opportunities, bigger audiences. Is that sort of the journey you're then on?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's only so far you can really go in Auckland for a while. So I was pretty bad for quite a long time.
But it didn't matter.
No.
Small scene.
Yeah, small scene. I think when I was in Christchurch and I was 15, 16 years old, I thought I was amazing. But it was the classic big fish, small pond situation. Then I moved to Auckland and got a bit of a reality check. And yeah, then I just sort of hustled in Auckland for many years, and until started getting better and opportunities came along and
grew from there. Mm. And so once you were gigging regularly, I guess initially when you were still at school and then when you moved to Auckland, I mean, in terms of your kind of comedy, was that something that you got to quite quickly, or was that very much a work in progress for some time?
Yeah, I think it was, because I think when I started, my comedy was very, I'm underage.
So play to the fact that most of the audience was, I mean, some places were you potentially playing places where actually technically you weren't allowed in?
No, I actually got a bar shut down once because I legally wasn't allowed to be in there, and they'd booked me.
Yeah, so if that's something you could really play into.
Well, yeah, I kind of had to. My whole stuff was, you know, not legally allowed to be here.
Yeah.
Can someone give me a ride home?
Yeah.
All that crap. So I guess when I moved to Auckland, it was a bit of a transition into trying to figure out what else I could talk about and try and move on from there. And yeah, everyone always says to me, oh, I wish I started as early as you did and things. So I guess I'm kind of lucky that I've, you know, already got 12 years experience and I'm 28. I don't know if that...
I mean, to leave school and say, I don't need to go to university because I'm already on this comedy career.
Yeah, I probably did need to go to university, but... Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of people, they're it's actually at university or just after that they discover the joy of performing.
Sure, yeah.
And so once you were sort of progressing, I mean, I guess in terms of, I guess because I follow comedy very much from an Edinburgh mind, just sort of following people from the open mic to the 5 minute, the 10 minute, the 20 minute set until we get to that full hour, sort of the first album equivalent. And so at what point were you like, okay, I can now do the full hour show?
Well, the thing is, in the early Christchurch days, we were just pushed into doing it very fast. So I was doing it
because there were few comedians and a lot of time to fill.
Yeah, and I think they put on a Christchurch comedy festival, and it was like, all right, well, who's doing one? I think I did my first one when I was 16.
Wow, okay, blimey.
Of course it was awful. I think I would have done half an hour in this pub where all my family and friends came along, and I killed because my family and friends were there. But so yeah, I guess I started doing it quite early, but I think that was good because I think I established myself as a solo act fast. I think a lot of people, they'll do a split bill and then a triple bill and then a split bill, and they take their time to get to, I'm the solo act and I'm doing my own hour, but, you know, I sort of kicked it off early and.
So then, yes, I guess when you were in Auckland and the idea of doing the one-hour show came up, for you, it's like, well, I've already done that.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe do better this time.
And then I think my first proper one was when I was about 19 or something. Again, it was trash, but don't regret it. I think they you learn a lot.
Yeah.
Doing all those early ones and things. And then I did have a job. I was an itinerant drama teacher in the day when I moved to Auckland. And it was only kind of when I stopped doing that that I started making some progress. Yeah.
Still did a little bit of the acting, albeit teaching.
Yeah, doing it. Yeah.
Well, let's get to this year's show. So remind me the name.
It's called Looks Like a Bit of Me.
And give us the concept of the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, the title has nothing to do with it. It's one of those things when they ask you in October.
For the title.
For a title.
Yeah.
And you go, oh. So the title was just a gag, visual gag for the poster. But, yeah, the show's kind of, I don't really want to spoil it really, but I guess I can.
Give us the basic premise without any of the major plot developments.
Yeah, it's pretty much, I do a lot of stuff around the internet and I'm a bit of a pest on the web, a bit of trolling and things like that.
So this is trolling on Reddit, in the YouTube, TikTok comments?
Oh, mainly Facebook.
Mainly Facebook. Yeah, Facebook comments.
That's when people get the most angry. Facebook community groups and Facebook Marketplace. And there's something in the show that I've done through Facebook that is kind of my favourite part of the show, that is what everyone talks about, which I cannot reveal.
Of course.
but involves heavily stalking the audience.
So in terms of trolling people on social media, is that something you just enjoy doing anyway? Or was it actually, I can do a good comedy show out of this?
Yeah, kind of kicked off in lockdown when it was kind of that period where we couldn't do any gigs.
Yep.
So we had to kind of make some comedy elsewhere.
Yep.
So I started doing that kind of thing on TikTok and things like that, and they were quite popular. And that's kind of when my comedy started merging into that kind of visual stuff. Yeah, I think, yeah, and quit it. I had to quit my job after when lockdown began and things. So, yeah, I was kind of thrown into, all right, how can I make comedy not on the stage? And yeah, so that's kind of where that kicked off, yeah.
When it comes to doing a full-hour show now, do you obviously pick a title to the deadline? But beyond that, is it you have a basic idea and a blank sheet of paper, or do you have, you know, stories you've told, routines you've delivered, jokes you've told that you're then going to sort of, you know, pull into a sort of a compilation?
Yeah, I kind of just get whatever I can together and then stitch it through. But it's
but especially for this show, or do you look back at what you've performed over the last year and it's like, yeah, because like a bit from there and a bit from here?
Yeah, a bit of both. This year I had a couple stories that I knew would be great, and it was just a matter of filling in the rest of it. This I'm doing in Edinburgh, kind of a best of, so I've chucked in a few things from past shows and things. So yeah, it's a bit of a mishmash of a few shows. But yeah, I think each year the shows kind of come to you in different ways. Sometimes you have a lot of it ready to go. Other years it's more of a struggle and a, you know. Yeah, sometimes I will actively go online and try and make some drama happen in a group, Facebook community group.
Hold it for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Definitely looking for someone to get really angry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes if you don't have any stories, you've got to make your own.
Of course.
I think, yeah.
To what extent is the Edinburgh Fringe now an important part of your year, important part of your sort of comedy career?
Yeah, well, it's my first time doing it. It's kind of always been the scary thing that I've heard horror stories about of comedians from New Zealand going, oh, I had two people a night and was sad for a month.
I lost all this money.
Yeah.
And yet, here you are.
Yeah, but I wanted to tick it off. I knew it was going to be hard. You're not playing to your home crowd, which is something I knew to expect. So you're going to have a mix of audiences.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the people are coming to see me from Taskmaster New Zealand.
Yep.
But again, those audiences, they don't know me as a stand-up. They know me as being a freak.
On that show.
Trying to complete tasks. So again, you're in that stage of filtering out who likes you and who doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's some nights I'm like, oh, these are my people. The next night I say, oh, not my people. So it's a bit of a roller coaster, but I'm happy to be here. And yeah, excited to grow an audience and come back next year, yeah.
You mentioned Taskmaster. I should have talked about that when we were on the journey. How did that come about? When did the New Zealand version, how long has that been going?
It's been going for about, it's the seventh season.
Oh, wow, so that long, yeah.
Yeah, it's been going for 7 years. It's, yeah, it's very popular. I think it's like, you know, one of the more favourite international versions, which is pretty cool. Yeah, that just came about because I've been emailing the production company for many years, begging.
I mean, I guess it's what? How many is it? 8, 9, 10 comedians each series?
Five.
Oh, yeah. Five. Okay, yeah. Okay.
So. Yeah, so we don't have that many comedians. So you're bound to get on at some stage. But yeah, I think I think it's important to like tell people that you want a job.
Yes, let them know that you're up for it. Yeah,
so I definitely made that night. And then it just luckily came my way, and yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that challenge of, and I think a lot of comedians now, either you get the TV opportunity and you reach a much bigger, newer audience, or indeed you get find an audience on TikTok and you're building an audience over there, versus the audience who come and see your shows. And obviously, there's a lot of crossover between those three, but maybe they're looking for something slightly different. And sort of the fear when you get up on stage, it's like, oh, you're here, as you say, here to see me do some silly tasks, or maybe here to do what I do. I mean, it sounds like some of what you do on TikTok is kind of in the show.
Yeah.
But there are, sometimes it is, you know, will the people who've seen my 60-second videos get the full hour on stage?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's a fear. But, yeah, I think that the stuff I did on Taskmaster does kind of reflect the stuff that I do on my show.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's not too much of a change for people. But yeah, it's just a journey, isn't it? You just got to build an audience in a completely new country is crazy hard. I feel like it took me so long in New Zealand.
Yes. And that's very small.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
small audience to reach.
Yeah.
So first Edinburgh, we're a week in.
Yeah.
Do you think, because for all you, we can talk to many comedians, Australian, from New Zealand, elsewhere in the world, who could tell you about the horror stories of this festival, and the trauma of this festival. But there are also a lot of people from your part of the world who do literally come here every single year.
Yeah.
Can you see that becoming part of your calendar?
I mean, I'm staying in a accommodation with some comedians that do it every year, like Ray O'Leary. So yeah, I look to people like that who he started doing it maybe 3 years ago, and talking to him, it sounds like his first run was very similar to my first run, so things like that are comforting to hear. Yeah, they're actually filming a documentary at the moment about New Zealand comedians coming over here, which will be interesting to watch, because they're interviewing the comedians that did it in the 90s.
Oh, interesting. To compare to now.
So they're talking to people like Flight of the Conchords,
who
stormed it.
I remember.
And then people like, there's a guy, Di Henwood, who's a New Zealand legend, who was flatting with them at the same time and having a completely different experience. So, it'll be interesting,
Yeah, that'll be fascinating to see in the version between, because I think there's, I always find, I've been coming to festivals so long now, and you'll always find people who will say to you, oh, it's not like it used to be. You should have been here 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, because it was less corporate, it was less commercial, it was less expensive, it was better.
Yeah.
My first Fringe was 1994. When I came here in 1994, everybody said, oh, it's not like it used to be.
Oh,
you should have been here 10 years ago, when the Fringe was really the Fringe.
Well, so people keep saying to me, like older people, they keep saying, oh, what time are you going to bed? And I went, oh, 8, 9 p.m.? And they're like, I would have been up at 5 a.m.
Yeah. I've been chucked out of one of the late night venues.
Yeah, well, I could not be doing that. I'm going to do a show every day.
Beyond the Fringe, is the plan to tour this show, whether that's back in New Zealand or in Australia or elsewhere in the world, or will you be on a new show come September?
Yeah, I'm kind of done with this show, and I want to get cracking on another. I'm going to be doing Australia and New Zealand next year. I'm actually going to be touring the UK in February. I'm opening for Ray O'Leary.
Oh, cool.
So that'll be fun. But yeah, as I said, I'm kind of doing a best of, and you know that some of that gets stale after a while once you've been doing it for years. So you kind of get desperate to throw it all out and start again. So I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, hopefully come back again. And I'm a lot of whips. That's my job, pretty much.
An awful lot in progress.
Yeah.
Well, let's remind people of the name and the listings for this year's show?
Yes, it's called Jack Ansett Looks Like a Bit of Me. It's on every day at 4 p.m. at the Assembly George Square Studio number 4. Please come. And bring a fan.
Yeah, it's actually getting quite warm in it.
Yeah.
It's a bit cold and that was quite nice.
Yeah.
And finally, where people find you online?
Just my name, Jack Ansett, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok.
And if you want to be trolled, go and join some Facebook groups and
yeah.
You can have that experience for yourself. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.